Good morning. My name is Sean, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Advocacy Practitioners Sharing Session for conference. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Stephen Abram, Executive Director for the Federation of Ontario Public Libraries. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Sean, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us in the, I think this is our eighth session that we've been doing from the Federation of Ontario Public Libraries, or FOPL, around increasing our muscle in preparation for advocating for the wonders and value of public libraries in Ontario and the difference we make in our communities on so many levels and our very complex value proposition. And this is one I've been looking forward to for quite a while, to talk about the differences and the special strategies that are necessary and done very well often in small and mid-sized libraries across our province. I want to remind everybody that the recordings of all of our webinars and teleconferences are on the FOPL website, fopl.ca, and there you'll find the academic underpinnings with Cheryl Stenstrom for a two-parter, and Wendy Newman and Ken Haycock have done sessions on networking and tips and tricks. We've had a community engagement strategy from Maureen Berry and Carrie at Burlington Public Library, and we've had other teleconferences on tips and tricks from Sam Coughlin, who was at Stratford and Oxford Libraries, and Ken Roberts at Hamilton Public Library. But today, I'm excited that five great CEOs from across Ontario have joined us to just have a discussion. And this is sort of a little more informal, but it gets at some of the experiences and stories and ideas that we can all derive some insights from on how people are doing it and what they're learning about influencing at the local level. So I'd like to introduce our five panelists. I was going to do it in alphabetical order, but I didn't write them out that way, but I'll try and keep it in alphabetical order. We have Mary Baxter, who's at Georgina Public Libraries. We have Claire Dion, who's north of Ottawa, so in the near north in Ontario, at Russell Public Library. And also both Mary and Claire are on the FOPL board, and Claire represents the Franco-Ontarian Caucus. I have Susan Downs, who's doing innovative work at Innisfil Public Library. We have Rona O'Banion, who I believe is chairing AMPLO, the Association of Medium-Sized Public Libraries in Ontario this year, who's at King City, and Cindy Weir, who's at Owen Sound Public Library. So welcome, folks. It's great to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Great. Yes, but yeah, me too.
And thanks, everyone, for volunteering. It's one of the great wonders of library land that people are willing to share, and we can all learn from each other. So I'm going to ask each of them in turn. I gave them a couple of questions in advance, and I thought the first thing was, you know, how are small and mid-sized libraries, advocacy in that environment, how's it different? Like, you know, I'm a big urban guy. I live in downtown Toronto. I've left Toronto a lot, but I've always been in the largest, busiest library system in the world, and my personal experiences with a massive, complex library environment, not less complex or more complex than small and mid-sized libraries, but certainly scale is different. And I just wonder how it's different in a small town or a county or a mid-sized library environment. Mary, did you want to start commenting
sure.
on that?
I don't know if I can say much about how it's different because I've been here 25 years.
Uh-huh.
And when I worked for TPL, I was just, you know, a low-level assistant branch head. So, what I like about mid-sized library, small-town life, is that you really are close and cozy with everybody at the town hall, with your public, with your board. You see them at theirs. You see them at church. If you go to church, you know, you're on the same clubs and committees. So advocacy becomes very much intertwined into your daily relationships with a lot of people in your town. You can walk into the mayor's office and bring him a coffee from Tim's if you want. It's all a lot of the advocacy is done in an informal way. We have a great relationship with also our local cable station, which is housed right in my building, and they do a lot of promotion for us. So that, you know, building relationships is easier. It's also, however, you can put your foot in your mouth pretty darn quickly too.
Oh, interesting.
I've done that.
Oh, I'm an expert at it. Sometimes our passion gets in the way necessarily of...
Or you forget who's related to who.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's a very big thing in small towns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People change their names, but not their bloodlines.
Susan, what's your perspective on the overall differences?
Well, I think that I would take a little different perspective on it, and that is I think it affects the way we can change our services. And I think that we are so much more flexible than a very large library system. So in a sense, although we may be disadvantaged in terms of budget, and we may not have a community that's in tune with many of the larger happenings in the world, being rural, we still have the opportunity to turn things around. And as Mary said, we know our communities, so finding out quickly what they need and what they want is easier. And then our organization, being smaller, is flexible enough to change itself around to meet that need. And I would say that for me, that's the biggest thing. I think perhaps on a note that I've heard a lot from small libraries is that they are overwhelmed by the amount of work, and they feel that the only things that they can do are to, you know, stamp those books out day after day, and they really don't have the energy or resources to move beyond that. So I have an old thing that I always say to people is that if you're driving along in a snowstorm and you're looking at the road in front of you, you're going to miss the deer in your headlights. So that would be my word of advice, is if you feel like you're overwhelmed and you can't do it, remember you have so much going for you and you have that flexibility and you can change things to meet your community needs.
Mm-hmm. And you're a model of that, Susan. I sent somebody your way this morning.
Oh,
they,
okay.
They wanted me to get a 3D printer, and I said, go talk to Susan Downs.
You can come too.
They've done it all.
Well, we'll get into some of the innovation stuff as well, I think. But Claire, you have some special challenges. You're in a bilingual community and somewhat rural small town. What are your perspectives?
Well, I agree with Mary a lot that I think in my case, well, in many small libraries, rural libraries, advocacy is like a 24-hour thing. You're always in being asked to advocate. You meet your counselor at the, when you do your groceries, you go to the gas station, there's another counselor or people that you can advocate to. So it's like a 24-hour thing. It works. Sometimes it has advantages, and sometimes it does have disadvantages. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with your patron also. There's a more personal aspect to things, but sometimes it has advantages, and sometimes it does have advantages. And I agree with Susan also that sometimes also we are more flexible, that we can turn ourselves around easier than other larger libraries.
Interesting. I can assure you I've never met Rob Ford in the grocery store, and I'm not far from his neighborhood.
Do you want to meet him in the grocery store?
Well, he clearly goes.
Susan, to that point, I met somebody in the sauna at the YMCA once who wanted to know about her library card. So, you know, it does have its downside.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
I can tell you I often have conversations with my MPP's father in the sauna at the Y. I've been able to get into my MPP because of knowing his dad. So there's always opportunities everywhere. Cindy, how's the situation in Owen Sound? I know you've been going through some strategic change initiatives and stuff. What's your perspective on how things are different in mid-sized library district?
Well, I think one of the things, Stephen, with a mid or small-sized library, you have fewer staff at a management level who can go out and do the advocacy that we're talking about at this level, whereas larger systems have a much larger management team who can be dispersed out to make a lot of those contacts. I think, too, that the board members who often do the advocacy for us may not have the same skill sets. They might not have the same opportunities on other boards that they have in larger systems as well. So I think we're doing some training with our board and working with some advocacy with them, and I think that's going to be very beneficial for us. I am in a unique situation where I really have three councils that I'm responsible to and a fourth one who does help fund us as well. So we have a large contingent of councillors on our board itself, and it's remembering the things that Mary said, who's related to who. It's attending everything you can in your community, whether it's the dedication of a bridge, an exhibit opening at the gallery, whatever's happening in the community, you want to be there, in addition to your local shopping and all of those opportunities to give your elevator speech, to talk about what you've just accomplished at the library. I think that's a little bit different than in the larger systems where you have more formal opportunities to express yourself.
So every one of you mentioned seeing politically important people who obviously care about their communities. They wouldn't be running and involving themselves with their communities, that you see them in the grocery store or just walking around. What is the nature of a conversation you have? Like, you know, we talk a lot in libraries about elevator speeches and being able to, you know, subtly introduce a value-laden, impactful intersection of what we're doing when we have a conversation. What sort of stuff do you talk about with those people? Like, when you know them personally, you're at a grocery store, you're in an informal environment. What does it look like? Susan, why don't we start with you?
I think that one of the things I try and keep at the back of my mind when I'm in the elevator is, what are they doing and how can I make them successful? That's the question I've asked myself for counselors and those that fund us in other ways. How can I advance their strategies for their organization or for the whatever position they hold? And then the conversation often relates to that. I think if we talk about library all the time, we don't really do ourselves the same kind of, we don't make the gain that we could make if we sort of repositioned ourselves as the organization that can make things happen in the community. So I think that's my strategy.
So secondary question, you say, okay, I want to know, how do you find out what they're interested in? Like, is it in the paper, or do you just know from talking to their aunt, or, like, you know, how do you find out what they care about?
That's good stuff in small communities. That's what's really easy, because it is in the newspaper. It is the buzz in the coffee shop. If I find out that somebody doesn't like what I'm doing and I find out that they have coffee at the Stroud Tim Hortons, then I can take my 3D printer down to the Tim Hortons and print something in front of them. And usually it's because they're talking about old cars and fixing old cars. I know that. You know, so it's bringing all those things together. But small communities allow you to sort of make that understanding very comprehensive and have that full response ready. So it is thinking about who those potential partners could be and making sure that you know what they're doing and making sure that you have something that would be of interest to them or might help them out.
Because I always find it's good to know, you know, what grade their kids are in school, because that's something they care about, or their grandkids, and, you know, what clubs they belong to, because it says a little bit about what they're interested in. Gives you a point of intersection to actually open a conversation.
Or just it may be that you know from someone's personality they're really interested in new ideas. Some people just like to hear about new things. You position the new things you're talking about as being things they would be interested in.
Yeah. Stephen, this is Cindy.
Hi.
I certainly agree with what Susan's saying, and that's definitely along the vein of Ken Haycock last week one of the things, in addition to looking at what our councillors and mayor are interested in, and you often hear what that can be at their council meetings as well, so certainly attending those is very beneficial. I also try to make them aware of the unusual things that happen. For example, we had someone call in from his trip to Panama, and he was having trouble having trouble connecting and downloading a book from OverDrive, and we helped him make that connection. So I made sure that something as simple as that was brought to the attention of all of our council, because one thing, they might be away on a trip and need another book, but also they're seeing how far-reaching we really are. And the next time we need to ask for money for e-books or technology, that's going to jog their memory.
Well, it's also a nice story that demonstrates the extra mile you go on customer service and the customer service focus, that not all city departments are as warm, fuzzy customer service as the library.
Right.
Because they're going to get fewer complaints. I understand that they get fewer complaints about service at the library than they get at, you know, licensing or places like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm crediting up licensing, but we tend to have excellent customer service. Rona, how about you? Like, you know, what sort of stuff do you talk about when you see someone?
I don't want to repeat everything that everybody's already said, but I'm going to say sort of a combination of two approaches, in that I do think it's human nature that if you express genuine interest in them as a human being, that helps forges your relationship. And of course, borrowing on what everyone else said, whether you meet them on the street or I go out of my way to attend as many council meetings as I possibly can, and just by virtue of my being in the room, they automatically translate that into the library being engaged, which, of course, is the point I'm trying to make. And it carries a lot of weight, because they recognize that a lot of times I sit there, and while I don't have necessarily anything on the agenda, I make sure that I'm plugged in, and so hence the library is plugged in. And that is, of course, one of the ways that you also can, as I think Cindy said it, ascertain what individual council issues are, because obviously that's where it comes up. At the council table itself. So those two approaches seem to really help raise the profile of the library with the councillors in particular. And again, in our case, I have a very large board, and all 11 of them have relationships with people on council. And so we're very strategic about who reaches out to whom about what, because not everybody plays nicely, so we make sure those people don't connect, specifically on a library advocacy issue.
I can certainly identify with that. I've got FOPL has a 22-person board,
well,
and it's been a gift to get to know all those people, but it's a lot of work to get to know 22 people and what they're interested in.
and how to manage them and what their individual agendas are, and, you know, it's a lot of relationship building. I have to say that's probably at the cornerstone of what we do.
Excellent. So, Claire, how about you?
I have a strategy that I've been using for years, which I call, it's like planting seeds. I think advocacy is you have to see it as a long-term thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've succeeded in doing is, if you have long-term projects, is if you just plant little seeds here and there, and when you meet your counselors or your mayor, whatever, you talk just a little bit about something, and all of a sudden, these become their own ideas. And
yeah.
And that's when you see that you've succeeded. And, well, it's a difficult strategy, but it does work. And you do that for, like, you plant seeds like that, and all of a sudden one of your ideas is picked up by a community group. And, you have not necessarily done anything yourself for that idea, but you've succeeded in having another group take it over.
Well, that makes
and
it more
I think
powerful,
that's
too.
That worked, but you have to think long-term for that. And in fact, in my municipality, there's a funny thing, is that all mayors have been on the library board before they became mayor.
Oh, that's helpful.
So, like, there's something, whenever a councillor is named on the library board, everybody says, well, I think they're going to become mayor.
Well, that's actually a good thing, because it's training.
Yes.
And they're well informed about the impact we have. That's something you don't see so much in larger urbans. That,
no.
The volunteer depth in a smaller community means that you've got people rotating through several times.
Mm-hmm. We had the mayor on our board for at least two terms, if not three. I'm not sure if when he handed it over to a counselor this last round, whether it was because his confidence in the board had increased to the point that he didn't feel he needed to be there, or he just got bored, you know, and needed to move on. But
is that Mary?
Yes, Mary.
Oh, great. So, you know, I really like the point about what Claire made around planting seeds. Like, obviously, they're like, you know, buying an e-book collection is a smaller decision than big picture stuff like building or renovating a branch that might take a few years of advocacy and coalition building. What sort of stories do you talk about when you see someone out in the community or invest on?
Often, as someone else mentioned, it's not about the library at all. It's about them. It's about concerns in the town. It really is just relationship building, and then often library things get threaded in or questions come up or you tell a story about something that's happened or is going to be happening. One thing that I do a lot of attending to events and meetings and volunteering when the town is doing something, you know, United Way or whatever, helping out at the town booth at events sometimes. And we also do a lot of inviting. We invite the mayor and the chair of the library board and other counselors to, it's often the mayor, to come in and read at our renovation celebration that we had recently or when we have Christmas readings, and he's a very outgoing guy and likes to do that sort of thing, and it's a fun way to interact, and he's by and large a good library fan.
Well, I think that's also, it's meeting their needs. Like, if you're an elected official, photo ops are
not sleazy.
When we talk about the Cialdini framework or what Ken was talking about last week, it's reciprocity. You know, you're coming to the library and endorsing what we're doing, but, you know, we can meet your needs by showing a nice picture of you doing something out in the community that's nice.
Right, and because we work very closely with the town here in Georgina, we get a lot of services from them, and they get a lot of services from us, and I try to be a very good team player, and I think that that's appreciated.
Yeah, if I can just jump on what Mary's saying, it's Rona, because I have a real-life example. In terms of just being out there in the community, because it's Christmas time, there are a lot of lunches around town, and I've attended almost all of them. I'm always happy to eat. That's just an aside.
You got it anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. But what's ended up happening, of course, just by virtue of my being in the room, is whoever the speaker was, whether it was the head of the chamber or the mayor or one of the counselors, I can't even remember all the different things that I've been to, the library was mentioned. And each one of these speakers in their own way shared a personal anecdote about the library and encouraged everybody to visit the library. And I guarantee you, had I not been in the room, that wouldn't have happened.
You're absolutely right. That happens at our Chamber of Commerce breakfast as well.
It's just, I think at the chamber he mentioned the library five times. Couldn't believe it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I really think it's you're all displaying behaviors that were recommended across several times on the Cialdini stuff, that getting your face out there increases things that are important around, they have a relationship with someone they know, and they like people they see multiple times. We gradually build likability just by being visible.
Indeed.
And frankly, I'm an extrovert, but I know enough introverts who do enjoy going to places and listening to other speeches and hearing what's going on in the community. And it's just, it pays off in so many levels on building capacity. So I think my next question is, nearly every one of you that I talk to on the phone, and it is that season in Ontario where the early stages of budget approval processes are happening. And if there's anything we want to influence, it's effective budgets for libraries. Sometimes increases, sometimes avoiding cuts, sometimes ameliorating cuts when they're necessary. So if I talk to Rona. I understand you were up till midnight last night at City Council.
I was indeed.
And so tell us a story about the stuff you do prior to the budgeting process, because obviously budgets are not the right time to freshly ask for new stuff.
Absolutely. And Stephen, you framed the question beautifully, because that was going to be my response. If the first time they're hearing for a request for money is at the budget discussion, you're already behind the eight ball. They need to be aware of this beforehand. So what I do is usually, whether it's having a coffee, picking up a phone, the mayor and I went out to breakfast. We do that a couple of times a year. And I just make sure that they are not surprised. I think that's the one thing that we can absolutely control, and it's very easy. Politicians never want to be surprised. So if I often start talking about my needs, or the library's needs rather, far in advance, so that by the time they see what it is we want, it's old news to them and they've acclimated to it, and more often than not, we have been successful with that.
Awesome. So, Mary, I know that I think you spent your morning on some of this stuff. So,
well, yes, I experienced a huge amount of anxiety at budget time because it seems to go on for so long, because our Georgina is always late with budgets. We won't have a budget till March or April, but I start getting it in front of the board in November, and they always promise it's going to happen sooner than that. So then you think, I need to move faster, But I like Rona's point was excellent about not liking surprises. And I think just having regular conversations, whether they're formal or informal, with politicians and other key people in town, so that they know what's coming. In 2014, nothing's coming. It's an election.
Oh.
It's an election year. We're not asking for anything.
Yeah. No one wants to run on increases in budget.
That's right. But in 2013, we had a renovation to our branch, and it flew through last year without a peep, because they were well aware of what my vision was of what needed to be done, and they were good.
So what did you think you did right to get the renovation through? Because that's big dollars, especially for a small community. It shows in the newspaper.
Well, I talked about the evolution of library services from when our branch was built. It's only 12 years old, but the growth in e-services and the lack of an accessible children's washroom in the children's area, and how we lost our growth space when the town rented it out to the Rogers Studio, which I mentioned earlier as being a real good bonus to us for publicity, but it was our growth space. So I think maybe they were feeling a little badly about that, because I tried to be gracious. And then publicly, bitter in private, but gracious publicly. So it was how we could meet our new needs in our existing space. And I think they just understood the challenges. And I wasn't asking for a new branch, so that, you know, it was it was fine.
Susan, there's the regular budget stuff, and then there's sort of, you know, I wouldn't say it's out there, but it's, like, you know, what you've done is totally appropriate. But you've done some pretty innovative stuff, and transformational, and somewhat tied to a vision for a new branch, but also tied to, you know, your makerspace and your community engagement makerspace is quite a different strategy for some of our communities. What kind of budgeting advocacy do you need to do for that kind of stuff?
I think it really starts with your strategic plan if you're in the middle or starting one. I think the most important thing is to be clear in that strategic plan. And again, it comes to that no surprise business. You know, council does like to know well in advance, and the public likes to know that you've heard them as well. So reflecting what the community's told you in that strategic plan process, including council in it, so that they know. And then when you're coming forward with budget ideas, you're not surprising anybody in the long term, because you can hold up that paper and say, you know, we really involved you in this, and we really hope you read it, and reminding them of that. So we do go back to, I mean, we've asked community a lot this year, and we continue to talk to our community. We've